went to some school, young, maybe, you know, elementary school maybe even, or mostly, you know, not very old. So he asked for a very intelligent student. So the one boy came up and Prabhupada started asking him, you know, what's this? He said, it's my arm. What's this? It's my head. This is my ear. And they were thinking, what's this really? Then he said, who are you? He's the owner of all these things. And they woke up. That's what people don't think. Everybody says my arm, even my body, right? My head. I have a headache. You know, not I am a headache, but we don't think about it. We don't realize. So this is... You ever wondered who you are? You know, I'm not my eyes, right? Not the nose, right? Everybody think about that? Not the mouth. Everybody knows that. It's not you. You're not the ear. Not the hand, not the arm. This one really gets into it. So. But this is important for preaching because people don't understand what it means. Not my foot. So who am I? Right? That little book, Who Am I? We had so many, and it got a good response. And there's one devotee there in Ghana. He's an engineer. He's been a devotee many, many years. You know, read Bhagavad Gita. Got married at the temple, everything. And he was so excited, he said, you know, my whole life I heard I'm not the body, but I never understood it until I read that book. I didn't understand what it means. So, I'm me. I'm the person inside the body, right? I'm the spirit inside the body. And whatever moves the body, that's the spirit soul. Really gets into it. I can walk and talk, can even dance, right? Can make the body do this. We're the master of the body. By our desire. Sometimes you can't, though. You get crippled or something. We can change and grow the body, but we're the same person, right? Isn't it? Deno smin yata dehe komaram yoganam jara tata dehantara prapti dera satranam nishti. That's the first thing practically in Bhagavad Gita. The first lesson is that the soul is changing from baby to childhood to youth, and, you know, many different changes. The body's changing. From the womb it starts out just one little tiny, like a pea, and it grows into a full body with all the hands and legs and arms and eyes and ears and everything, feet, fingernails, finally comes out and thinks it's his body, because everyone says, oh, what a beautiful baby, this is so nice, right? So they get fascinated. So we'll be the same now. And people recognize you that haven't seen you for 20 years, they'll recognize you, right? Even you call them on the phone, they'll recognize your voice. Right? Because everybody's different. You're the same. You don't remember being a baby, but your mother remembers. She knows you're the same person. Right? Then saints in India say that the spirit soul is what I am. This is meant for, like, really simple. Eternal spirit soul that never dies. That's what Deno Svinyata Dehe Komaram Jovanandara. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by all the changes, even death. Death is just a change of body. So the self-realized person is not bewildered even by death. Most people are very fearful of death. They wonder what's going to happen to them. And one devotee, he's a nurse for dying people in London. And they say many people, like, when they know, like, there's a certain point they get to where they know they're going to die in a few hours. All the nurses know when they know. And then sometimes they start asking, well, what's going to happen to me? Before that, they're saying, make me live longer, save me, help me. then they realize, okay, what's going to happen? What's going to happen after I die? Devotees, we should know if we're always chanting in this life. So many things can happen to the body. But the soul, Krishna says, can't be burnt, can't be cut, can't be frozen, can't be damaged, can't be crushed. Right? The body can, so many things can happen to the body, but the soul is never really touched by it. So I'm not the only spirit soul. My parents are also spirit souls. And every one of us is a spirit soul. That's what Krishna says also, that saintly person sees everyone equally, the dog eater, the elephant trainer, the brahmana, the sudra, because there's all spirit souls inside different bodies. Right? You see that way? Everyone has a spirit inside. And it's the same size. The soul is the same size an elephant or an ant or a mosquito. But we get different bodies, and then we think that we're the body. Every living, they all think they're the body. The dog thinks I'm a dog. He acts like a dog. He doesn't really think I'm a dog. But he acts like a dog. So there's so many species of life. We can only put a few of them. Right? 8,400,000 species of bodies. Only 400,000 are human. And we don't know any of them practically. The demigods count and human and the Rakshashas and all those demons and other planets we read about. They're all in the human. We're all human. We're more or less all the same species. That means in Sanskrit form. And then there's 900,000 in the water and there's 3 million beasts, I think. You know, I don't remember exactly. And so many plants, and trees, and all those things, they're all living entities. And they all have life, they all have a spirit soul, and they're all changing bodies regularly. Finally leave the body, get another one. So human life is for men to understand that we are spirit souls. That's the beginning of human life, is when someone asks this question, who am I? Otherwise they're just dvipadapashu. You know what that means? Dvi means two, pada means feet, leg, and pashu means animal. So we have a world full of two-legged animals. They look like human, the body, but the consciousness, they never inquire about who they are, they never think about it. Or they think they know who I am. Oh, I know who I am, I'm so-and-so, and I'm Ibu, and I'm Igbo, and whatever you think you are. And my parents, that is. That's when you're a child and you learn that, their parents are very proud, right? When you can tell somebody what your address and your phone number and your mother's name and all this. I know who I am. And most people never get beyond that. You know, you got your ID card, can tell you who you are, right? You all have, right? People want to know where you're born. We want to know we're part of Krishna. And to learn more about this as God, because it's for everybody. And we're meant to serve and please God and be kind to other living souls, to all living entities. To learn how to love God, we can go to God at the end of this life. And that's what Krishna says over and over again in the Bhagavad Gita. To the eternal spiritual world. But this is, you know, that's not where we want to go. We want to go to Krishna. When you're giving it to materialistic people, this is what they want. Right? That's why God made us eternal like Him. He made us same quality as Krishna. We have eternal bliss and knowledge, but we're very small. Krishna is unlimited. So this is important to think about even. Sometimes, you know, the body is so much trouble, maintaining the body, decorating the body, bathing the body. Even in the most minimal way, it's so much trouble. Right? How much time we have to spend, like, you know, cooking and cleaning up after and eating, and then you have to have a sewage system in the city, you know, if you eat, and you have to, so much trouble. The then there's, on top of that, then there's disease, and old age, and suffer, the body starts to suffer, then we have much more trouble to take care of. So people don't want to grow old, they don't want to be diseased, because it's not natural for the soul. And in the spiritual world, there's no such thing. That's why we want that. But we can't get it in this world. They promise so many things, you know, this herb, this medicine, this religion is going to make you never get sick, right? Never get too hot, never get too cold, never get poor, everyone will love you, right? It doesn't happen. That's, even Krishna, not everyone loved Krishna. Getting enemies, seemed like. He said, Yudhisthira said, Agata Shatru, he doesn't have any enemies. But then he said, well, you know, he had so many enemies. Duryodhana hated Yudhisthira. But it wasn't that Duryodhana thought Yudhisthira is my enemy, but Yudhisthira didn't think anyone else was his enemy. He said, everything is the will of the Lord. That's the higher, you know, consciousness. You want to, you have to teach people, you know, what are the questions and what is the goal of life? They don't know. You ask practically anybody, what's the goal, what's your goal of life? I never thought about that. Maybe some, you know, people are thinking and save money to retire, you know, where they're going to go. They have it on the internet all the time. What's the best place to retire? You can get the most for your money. Right? There's different places, you know. Like I go to Thailand, so many old American men are there, retired. And they have a young girlfriend. And a big motorcycle. Some of them. Because they're living on their money they saved or whatever the government gives them because they're old. They can live very comfortably. But if they were in America, they'd have one little flat somewhere and be always worried. And no girls would care for them. So they tell people, and even people that are straight, you know, this place you can buy a house really nice for so much money. Saw one bank in London, they were advertising, what year, so much money, £500,000 or something can buy you. And, you know, someplace in Thailand you can get a beautiful house in the countryside, someplace in different thing, and then. Or you can get a parking space in the middle of London for your car. Middle of New York City, you can park your car for the same money that you can buy a beautiful house with servants in India or something. That's why many of our devotees like to move to Mayapur. They have servants anywhere else. This is another little book. This is a famous story, actually. You might have heard it. How the Cruel Hunter Became a Saint. Anybody know that one? I've heard of it. It's from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Narada Muni, I used to call him the Transcendental Spaceman, because when Prabhupada first came was right when they were first talking about sending men into space. Of course, they had to go in a little thing like this big and stay for a day or two. Narada Muni can travel anywhere in the universe instantly, just by plucking his vena. He doesn't have to get a visa, he doesn't have to get a ticket, he doesn't have to get a passport or anything. And everywhere he goes. So he went in one forest and to take a bath in the holy river. But he saw a deer wounded, suffering, a few other animals. Shot but not dead. So it bothered him very much to see that suffering. The devotee is supposed to be like that. That's called para dukhi dukhi. Should be unhappy to see others suffering, and para sukhi sukhi sukhi. You should be happy when you see other people happy. Most of us are, if we see someone else happy, we don't like that. And if we see someone suffering, we go, I'm glad I'm not suffering. Very good. That's why the news on TV just shows everybody suffering and all the disasters and all the problems. Oh, glad it didn't happen. And they interviewed after that terrorist attack in America, so-called terrorist attack, the 9/11 they were asking people in Japan what they thought about it, and they said, well, I'm glad it didn't happen to me. Where God protected us. And all over America was big signs, God bless America, God bless America. What about the rest of the world? Everybody wants to bless only their own country at the cost of every other country. So Narada Muni was looking around and he saw this hunter and hiding behind a tree, and he had an arrow ready to shoot, and he was a really low-class hunter. Very fierce looking. So Narada asked him, you know, who did this? Who's torturing these animals? He said, I did it. And Narada is very upset. He said, why are you doing this? He became very angry when Narada Muni challenged him. But then when he saw Narada Muni, somehow, you know, got bewildered, because Narada Muni is so powerful, saintly person. I'm not going to read everything, but he said, why are you doing this? Why don't you just kill him anyway? He said, well, I learned this from my father, I got from my grandfather. This is our family tradition. We half kill animals, watch them suffer. That's a common thing now, but in the slaughterhouses. Like some religions, they think you're not supposed to eat the blood, so they can, only way they kill the animal is to cut the throat. And then it takes 40 minutes for the animal to die. They say that's, they say use a sharp knife and it won't hurt. Mm-hmm. You believe that? Mm-hmm. That's what they say. The Muslims say that. And the Jews, sharpen the knife very much, then it won't hurt. It's true. If you cut with a really sharp knife, you won't feel it like right at the moment of cutting. But it must be very painful just to bleed to death for 40 minutes. So Narada Muni was very upset with this. And he was very proud. I did it. You know, I'm an expert. Narada said, you have to stop it. You'll have to suffer. You know, for all the animals that you cause suffering, next life you'll suffer. You'll be an animal, they'll come and torture you. Again and again and again, right? Not just once. But so he never heard any of this kind of stuff before. This is karma. I said, what's wrong with killing animals? You know, what I learned from my father. So he preached to him, you know, we're all spirit souls, same old thing, you know. All the different animals are spirit souls. They're all growing and they all deserve to be. So he talks about karma, then he's showing him that all these animals are going to come back in the next life and torture you. Or in the hellish planets, there's some kind of animal called a ruru roraru. They just eat the flesh of people that did this kind of things. But in the hell, there's no end to it. You don't die, you don't pass out, you just keep getting your body eaten up and all the pain. Then he remembered as a child, a Brahmin was teaching him the same thing. So he got bewildered and he said, what should I do? Narada said, you have to break your bow. Give it up. And he was thinking, how can I do that? It's my livelihood. And how am I going to live if I can't kill animals? Right? People still say that, right? How can I live if I don't eat meat? Where are you going to get protein? If you don't kill the cows, they're going to take over the world. You have to kill them. You ever heard that? People say a lot of crazy things. So he finally agreed. He broke the bow. And he fully surrendered to Narada Muni. So Narada said, you go home. He had offered Narada Muni in the beginning. He said, come to my house. I'll give you lots of animal skin, lots of meat. I have a big storehouse there. Narada said, I don't want that. just give this up. So he told him, go home and get rid of everything, and we'll take care of you. Start chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna,
Hare
Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He said, every day I'll send you sufficient grains for you and your wife, and you can take as much food as you want. And so Narada went back to where these half-killed animals were and cured them. Then the hunter really understood Narada Muni's power. Brought him back, you know, cured him from whatever the wounds were. Narada Muni is very powerful. He took out the arrows and rubbed their wounds with his hands and miraculously healed them. That's the power of a sacred person, like Jesus did that. So Margari was really convinced then. And Narada Muni left, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna
Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So the hunter went home, gave away everything he had to the brahmanas, and the brahmanas gave them to the poor people. One of the brahmins said he should cut off his hair, just like the yogis store their power in their hair. Sins are also stored in the hair. That's a nice one to think about. Yogis get power, but the sins, you know, these people have their long hair, they're very attached. So he shaved his head, took a bath, dressed very simple, had a little hut, and him and his wife, and they just started chanting Hare Krishna. So as people heard about this amazing thing, then they just came and they were giving him so much rice and whatever, you know, food, much more than he knew what to do with. He was amazed. We're supposed to learn from that we don't have to worry. Krishna says, give up all anxiety for gain and safety. Right? Don't worry. Krishna is taking care of everybody. He's providing food for everybody. You see that in every country. You know, people are sitting on the street selling something that costs almost nothing. You know, or chasing cars to sell something, and somehow they're healthy. Even the beggars here, they don't have any legs, and they're big and strong. Krishna takes care of them. So they were doing really good. Months later, Narada Muni was talking about the Lord with his friend Parvat Muni, and then they went to visit Margari. So when he saw them coming, he jumped up. He was very excited. Told his wife he'd run to meet them on the forest path. But then he was started running, but then he wanted to pay obeisances, but then he stopped. And he was kind of dancing around, and there were ants, and he was brushing all the ants out of the way so he wouldn't hurt the ants. Such a drastic change in his life. Before, he loved to torture animals, watch them die, you know, slow death. Now he's afraid to even hurt an ant. Just by chanting, by the mercy of Narada Muni. Narada Muni is very powerful. So then he paid obeisances, and then they glorified him. He washed the feet of the sages, and then they had a big kirtan. Right? Margari said, my great spiritual master, by your grace we receive sufficient food every day. In the future, do not send so much. We only need a little bit for two people. We don't need so much more. Narada, now is this Damodar time, we sing this song. So he also has caused us mercy. These two boys were demigods. Nalakuvara and Manigriva. They were sons of Kuvera. Kuvera is the treasurer of the demigods. He's the richest of all the demigods. Keeps all the money. So they, Prabhupada said, like most rich boys, they become addicted to wine and women and gambling. Right? so many rich boys we see all over the world. Father gives them a big car, and they have a credit card, and they don't care for anything except in sense credit. So they were sporting in the river in the heavenly planets with women. They were naked. And Narada Muni happened to come by, and the girls saw him, and they got embarrassed. They ran and got dressed and hiding. But the boys were so drunk, they didn't even see him. So Narada thought, what can I do to punish them? So he cursed them. But his curse is not a curse. You know, devotees don't curse anyone to suffer. He cursed them to become trees. But as a tree body, they would have their full consciousness. And they would remember, you know, what they were doing and why they were tree bodies. But on top of that, they grew in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. They had to be trees for like 100 years of the demigods, a long time. But then they saw Krishna as a baby playing around all the time. So they became great devotees. Then Krishna broke the tree, rescued them, and they came out, beautiful demigods, and they just glorified Krishna perfectly. And then Krishna said, now, because Narada Muni wanted you to become devotees, you become pure devotees. They even got Krishna prema, the topmost thing, pure love for Krishna. So he said, you can go back to the heavenly planet now, but you know, they won't be the same anymore. They won't go back and start sporting around with the girls in the river. Go back and just simply glorify Krishna. So Narada Muni, he does that kind of thing all the time. He's a Nagrari, so fallen person. And Prabhupada said Narada Muni is all of our guru. He's the first guru, actually. He learned everything from Brahma, but Brahma has his work, and Narada is the one that goes all over the world, all over the universe to preach. Narada was creating suns just by thinking they'd come out. There was no wife, no babies, just these sages were coming. So then he thought, we need one that only preaches about bhakti, only teaches love of Krishna, has nothing else to do in the universe. And by thinking like that, Narada Muni came. And then he taught Narada Muni Srimad Bhagavatam. It's in the second canto. And then he told him, now you go and you preach all over the universe. So Narada is very prominent, always preaching to everyone. Many, many of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Narada. Can somebody bring Bhagavad Gita to him? They were here earlier. So we are followers of Narada, but through disciplic succession. So Prabhupada also was like Narada. He picked up all the most fallen people. Practically every devotee was a meat eater. No, bring them many. Many devotees were drug addicts, all kinds of things. Some were first nice people, but by the contact with Prabhupada, it changed. And still going on. People, all kinds of Mayavadis, all kinds of simple people. Contact Prabhupada's books, and they change. So many, things, you know, we have many, many stories. Most devotees have that story. Not so many of us were pure, sinless people before we. It's only three. I want to distribute. So we want to catch up on all these instructions and understand the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is so important book. Some people think, well, it's basic, I read it already, now I have to get into Rasa Tattva, something higher. You know, but the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. It's exactly Krishna's words, so there's nothing more or better. It just depends on who's reading it, what they get from it. My buddies read it and get it all wrong. You know, one devotee I know, he wrote a beautiful book about Bhagavad Gita and how to introduce it. And he's a scholar. And in his house, he has many different Bhagavad Gita's by different commentators. And if you just look at them, they're so crazy, the things they say, you know, but then they get, oh, he's a big scholar because he thought of something new. One guy said the Bhagavad Gita is actually spoken by three different people. He analyzed the Sanskrit language and said it's different people speaking, because he can't understand it, Krishna. He's speaking to everyone, and he's speaking in many, many different ways to reach everyone. So we can't understand that. But the Bhagavad Gita is about surrendering to Krishna. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru. Just think of me, become my devotee, worship me, pay obeisances to me. Krishna says, me. My body say he doesn't mean him, he means something else. Something else beyond him. Many Hindus, they have deities, murtis, not deities, because they're not worshiping. They say that this statue is not God, but it's to help us to concentrate, to connect with the, whatever God is beyond that. Nobody can describe what that is. The devotees, they know this is Krishna. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. He is Krishna. So we're hearing the same thing Arjuna heard, but we're different. We're not the same as Arjuna. The Bhagavad Gita is the same. The Krishna we worship is the same Krishna Mother Yasoda worship. But we're not like her. Not so much in love with Krishna that she really believed that Krishna is her baby and needed her protection. And Krishna likes that. That's the highest way to worship Krishna. So this month is especially, you know, for that mood, Dhammanarda, child Krishna, butter thief, you know, these leelas of his childhood. All of Krishna's childhood pastimes are completely charming, completely purifying. You know, whether he's killing a demon, whether he's dancing with the gopis, it's all absolute. But the child ones are the best, and this Dhammanarda one is especially relished by Vaishnavas. In our line especially, but all over Vrindavan, every temple is, you know, everybody's offering a lamp to Krishna. And offering a lamp to Krishna is very auspicious. There was one mouse once in the temple, and the mouse would find the ghee wicks that were burned up, and then he would eat the ghee from the, you know, a little bit more or less. They usually go out. And one day he was really hungry and he started to try to eat one that was still burning. So it got stuck on his tooth and his whiskers lit on fire, and you know, it was very painful. He was jumping all over and he died. But he went back to Godhead because he offered the lamp to the deity. He was jumping around like that. So Krishna is very merciful. So we get this opportunity, Prabhupada arranged the whole society that, you know, where we can have all these wonderful books, prayers, association with devotees, kirtan, prasadam. There's nothing else needed. People say, give me mercy, but we have all the mercy. There's no more to give, it's only to take it and give it. You have the holy name, you have the Bhagavad Gita, you have, you know, the understanding of the regulated life, association of devotees, you have prasadam, and there's nothing more except to get more of it. And to, you know, if we get enough of it, we lose our taste. You know, we have so many desires, and Krishna fulfills all desires, so we have to be very careful. That's what the yoga process is about, to purify our desires. We just want Krishna, nothing else. That's what all the devotees ask for, they just want Krishna. Krishna will offer, and Krishna will give you anything you ask for, so you have to be careful. Most people go to church or to mosque, what are they, you know, what are they asking for? Right?
Prosperity.
Yeah, dharma, artha, economic development. And then Sanskrit. Some skip that, they just want sense gratification. They don't even care about the dharma and artha. They don't do any real religious activities, but still they go, they give a donation and say, give me, give me, give me. There was one very degraded singer in America in the hippie time, very famous,
So
she was not religious, but she saw how people are, so her, she had one song that's very simple. Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all got Porsches. I got to make amends. Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? Because that's how people are. What is it, if you could hear what people are thinking when you go to the church or something. Right? How many are saying, let me serve you? In America, maybe here I haven't seen it, in America the Sunday lecture is a big deal. And the guy works on it, you know, all week. And then they put a little advertisement, you know, what they're going to talk about. So one church I saw, it said, many people want to serve God. And then it said, as an advisor, God, you should do like this, you should do that. Let me tell you how it should be. If I was God, everything would be nice, there'd be no more. You know. Why is God then? One of my godbrothers, Satchinandan Swami, when he was first becoming a devotee, he had a lot of questions and he wasn't quite sure. And then Prabhupada came. So he thought, okay, I'll check it out, I'll test him. So he had the intelligent question, why did Krishna make Maya? Right? Prabhupada said, Krishna didn't make Maya, you made Maya. So then he decided to surrender. That's what the Bhagavad Gita says. Bhumirapo analo vayu kamano bodevacha ankarai tiyame bina prakatirastaja. There's the elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, gross elements, mind, intelligence, and foggy, false ego, subtle elements. And then aparyayam vitostanyam prakatim vidi mamakam, that there's another energy, aparyayam vitostanyam vidi, that is the living entities who are struggling with and maintaining this material energy. Because we want it, but then we struggle with it, but because of our desire to try to exploit and enjoy, we have the Maya. We didn't want to serve Krishna, so he gives us Maya. Still, you're serving Krishna indirectly, but that's much better to serve directly. And everyone is living like that. That's why Krishna didn't make it. He provides it to fulfill our desires because he gave us independence. Some people say, why did he give us independence if he knows we're going to not use it right? Right? Isn't it?
Yes.
If Krishna knows everything, why did he give me, you know, let me do this? But that independence is the really valuable thing because Krishna has unlimited independence. Without independence, there'd be no happiness. If you had no choice, what's the use of it, right? So you have absolutely no choice, you just have to serve Krishna. There's no love, there's no pleasing to Krishna, and it's not pleasing to anyone. But when we have independence, then we can choose. And when we choose, whatever we choose, we get the results. Life is constant choice, right? What are you going to do next? What's going to happen? Always a new, you know, something is presenting itself. A new situation, a new challenge, or a new pleasure, a new pain. How are you going to react? Are you going to complain to Krishna? If somebody doesn't act exactly the way you want to, are you going to kill them? You know, depending on what kind of power you have. Are you going to try to remember the Bhagavad Gita and see what Krishna says? Equal. Equal in happiness and distress. Equal in victory and defeat. Equal in honor and dishonor. Blame and credit, equal in all these different circumstances, free from dualities. Those are dualities. Jadwanda moha nirmukta. When one is freed from the dualities, then Vajanti mam drida vrata. He serves Krishna with a strong vow. You know, nothing can stop him. Drida vrata, very strong. Dualities, we're all controlled by dualities. If it's hot, we're trying to become cool, you know, I'll get money, I'll get air conditioned, I'll get a generator so the air conditioner will work, right? I heard from some Indians that were here back when the oil thing first started. He said it was a very nice country before. Everybody was peaceful and safe, you know. So the government was giving people money. Everybody got money. So most people, the first thing they bought was a refrigerator and an air conditioner. But then everybody's turning on the air conditioner and the refrigerators, and the electric couldn't handle it. So they break. And then they spend all the money to keep repairing the machines, and there's not enough electricity now. We don't have any electricity, most of it. So that's the nature of whatever we try to do in the material world to relieve suffering, we create more suffering. Everyone can see that now. Everybody is very much aware of that. Like all the cars, all the traffic jams and pollution and all these things, but still we want to get a new car. So you can be stuck in a nice car. Somebody gets a Ferrari car. That's what they show on the ads for the Prosperity Church. Ferrari car, but you can't drive a Ferrari car in Lagos. They're only like this high off the ground. The race cars, you know, they're made for the track. They hit bottom anywhere. Even an ordinary car hits bottom. But they can go 200 or 300 kilometers an hour, but you can't do it. You get arrested, you have an accident. One woman in Thailand, she got herself a new Ferrari car, and I don't know, I heard this secondhand, but she was driving really, really fast, you know, like checking out how fast she could go. And she didn't put the two seatbelts, she only put the bottom, she put the other behind. And she crashed into something that didn't move and cut her right in half. The seatbelt cut her right in half. But she was thinking, this is great, I'm going 300 kilometers an hour, you know. Whatever you have miles, 200 miles an hour. It's quite dangerous, you know, to drive that fast in any condition. But it just doesn't work. You know. People are trying to enjoy. What can they do when they get so much money? I was in the Delhi airport. When you leave, the first thing is a whiskey shop, and then tobacco and perfume. As soon as you come through the passport check, you're in the middle of this shopping. The first thing is whiskey. The right side is perfume. And the other next is tobacco. And all the tobacco says, tobacco is very bad, it will kill you. Big, big writing. In India, they kind of hide that. But in Europe, they show it really big. Every box. You know, cigarettes is very harmful to you and disturbs everyone around you. It causes miscarriage, it gives you cancer, like so many things. Still they're smoking because they're in big shops selling this stuff. So I saw some whiskey at $350. I thought, wow. Then I met a devotee there. He worked there. And I said, wow, I just saw this whiskey at $350. That's crazy. He said, oh, that's nothing. He said, I'll show you back here. And they had whiskey at $2,000, $5,000. The most expensive one was $6,280 US dollars. How much naira is that? Somebody buys it. I mean, it's in the shop. People have so much money, so they think they can enjoy more with, you know, at least people. And nobody would know because that whiskey is never advertised anymore. So even if you had it, nobody'd know. You know, they know if you have the Johnny Walker Blue Label. They've seen that advertised everywhere, so they know you spent $300. Nobody would know the $6,000, only you know. And as soon as you taste one taste, you think that the drunkenness will be any different than the cheap stuff, right? You think so? Anybody ever get drunk? Anybody ever been drunk? They had another thing in the... I was looking for something to drink. They had a... I can't remember the name of it, but hangover cure. Because when you get drunk, the next day you feel so bad. And so they sell some drink, and that's supposed to make you immediately okay.
Sometimes I've been drunk, I slept on the road.
Yeah, but it doesn't work. You know, they try to tell you, don't worry, it's okay to get drunk because then you just drink this and everything's all right. It's called Bhoga Tyaga in Sanskrit. Enjoy and give it up. You can enjoy it and you don't care about drinking when you're drunk. You don't want anymore. And the next day you have a big headache.
Yes.
And then when a person becomes a really drunkard, the only time they feel good is when they're drinking. First thing they wake up with a headache and drink, and then it's okay. Then they become alcoholic and they lose their family and their job and everything else. And nobody can tell them that they're in trouble. So in this material world, there's so many things like that. Don't worry. You eat too much, take this. In Japan, it's a champion of these kind of things, and they have so many energy drinks and stuff. They started that whole thing. But then they have some very expensive that's supposed to fix everything. I saw a TV ad one time. The Japanese company, the worker, not the workers, but like the managers, they'll go with the boss and they go to a restaurant and they just eat and drink like anything. Mm. So they show them all and they finally they're all just... Then the boss comes in with a box of gold something, you know, and they light up and everybody, and then again eating and drinking and laughing. And so people see that and think, oh yeah, that'll, I can do that. Even the yogi, the first yoga teacher I went to, he was Indian, and he said he knew some pranayama where he could eat a big feast and then eat another one. He could digest it so fast. And I was a big sense gratifier then, but I thought, that's crazy, that's not yoga. I thought you're supposed to give up stuff, you know. Not you do something, you know, they have a book, Yoga for Sex, you know, you can get more sex, you can eat more, you can enjoy more, but it's supposed to be that you become a servant of Krishna, that's really it. So please, you know, we have Bhagavad Gita here. By the kindness of Gopal Krishna, these Gopals. I've been asking him for about 20 years to give books since he gave me the job of coming here. But when Bhakti Dhirdamana Maharaj asked him, then he gave. He didn't care for me. But anyway, it builds up, so they send it. Because the temples in India, in December, they get so much money. Some businessmen give money to buy 20,000 Bhagavad Gita to give, you know, just to give to orphans or give to prison or someplace. Or they buy when they have a big factory and they give it to all their workers. So anyway, the temple ends up with a lot of books. So this time they went and checked and said they could send these books. We want everyone to read Bhagavad Gita and distribute it. There's 150 million people in Nigeria. How many can read? Not everybody, but, you know. But more and more percentage of younger people can read, right? And they read English. So they all need Bhagavad Gita. It's not like, well, I have it, so it's okay. No one else. You know, if they want it, they'll come to the temple and get it, right? How are they going to know about it, right? Even the Indians, most of them, they don't know anything. You know, they have their Durga, they have their Ganesh or something, and they pray for money just like everybody else. Pray for prosperity. And they don't have any philosophy. They might have a Gita, they might have some book, they don't even know what it is, but they never open it. They just put some chandan on it. No, they worship. Take care very nicely, wrap it up in silk, and offer incense, and they read it. So we want people to read it. Prabhupada went to a lot of work to translate all these books. And the Bhagavad Gita is an essential, basic book, but it's like Krishna's, you know, chanting Hare Krishna is the beginning, basic first activity we do practically, but it's also the last one we learn. It just gets more and more as revealed the more we do it. Not that, okay, I read Bhagavad Gita already, or I know a few slokas, so that's it. I don't need any more. Many people, we feel like that, oh, I read that already, let me find a new book. We go to Vrindavan and there's one shop. Rasa Bihari Lal. And he has, you know, hired devoted people to translate so many esoteric books. So if you pass the shop, Maharaj, Maharaj, come in, I've got 10,000 different books upstairs. Sorry, but I got to read the Bhagavad Gita. If we, there's some books we should read, some of them, but then we want to make sure we get the good translation, not just any translation. The Bhagavad Gita has everything in Prabhupada's purports, so he called it as it is, Yata Rupa in Sanskrit, Agama Mama No Uta in Japanese, Taka Yaka Yest in Polish. All around that part of the world it's almost the same, but as it is, not change. The purport explains exactly what Krishna is saying in the way that we can understand it. Otherwise, if we only read the slokas, we won't get it, because we don't have the background Arjuna yet. There's one devotee, now he's a sannyasi in Russia, and he was in the Navy, I think. And he heard that he was an officer, a major. He heard that some of the men on the ship were Hare Krishnas, and he was trying to do yoga or something, so he called them. And they were a little afraid, because normally the officer doesn't call you unless you did something wrong. Right? So he asked them, what is Hare Krishna? So they explained it, and they gave him Bhagavad Gita. And then they asked for a donation. He was impressed that they would ask the officer for a donation. A lot of nerve, you know. So he didn't read it. And they would see him, and they'd say, did you read it? He'd say, finally he thought, okay, I have to read it. So he read only the slokas. Then he said, you tell me, I read it. Then he had a dream, and Prabhupada came in the dream, and he spoke Russian. He said, you can read the purports also, it's good. So he did. And he quit the Navy and became the Sankirtan leader of all of Russia, organizing book distribution. He's called Ananta Krishna Goswami now, very blissful. But, you know, from reading Bhagavad Gita, he was sincere, so Prabhupada helped him. But we want people to read Prabhupada's purports, and then it has real meaning. So we want to, and we want all of us to read them again and again. And the more we read Bhagavad Gita, the more there is to it. I myself, I can testify. I've been reading it for so many years, and whenever I read it again, it becomes like, wow, I never read that before. But I know I read it before. Because Krishna is ever increasing, it's Krishna. It's not just some words on the page, like an ordinary book. I mean, I was a fanatic reader my whole life. My mother taught me to read before I went to kindergarten, and I just read books all the time. I would stay up in the bed with a flashlight reading books. But I never read any book twice, never even thought of it. As I, later on, and I couldn't even finish any book. Just, you know, I'd go in the bookstore and look and decide, okay, this one might be good, and I'd read a little bit. It's the same old stuff, you know. And then I got Bhagavad Gita. My first was Ishopanishad and then Krishna. At that time, Bhagavad Gita wasn't available. It had only been published, it was in bookstores, but where I was, it wasn't there. But we had the Ishopanishad, and we had, so I just read and read and read, and then I'd read again and again, still reading on over and over again. Not ordinary books, Krishna book. Prabhupada said, you read any one of these books. He said, different times, you know, you call a devotee and say, have you read this one? If you read only this book, you can become, go back to Gaudiya. Bhagavad Gita, Nectar Devotion, Krishna book, especially though, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially those books. Bhagavad Gita is always a basis in our preaching. You know, we're preaching to people who don't know anything. I was in L.A. years ago, and they asked me if I wanted to go to a university class. So I said, yeah. And this was a summer class. It was old people. And they wanted to hear about different religions. So they were very nice old people, maybe retired people even. So I thought, you know, what can I talk about? And so I just talked like this. Where's the other one? Just like this. The most basic thing I could possibly think of. You know. And when I finished, they were saying, where did you go to university? How did you learn so much? How did you become so scholarly, so brilliant? They were all Christian, you know. They're religious people. But they never heard that. They didn't know philosophy. They just, you know, they have some philosophy. I don't, you know, not lately, since I'm a devotee, sometimes I remember what we used to sing in the church. You know, they're pretty nice songs. You know, as it was in the beginning, and it now and ever shall be, and God is unlimited, and you know, but it didn't ever sink in to me, you know, because they didn't explain it. You know, what is a soul? What is heaven? You know, what do they show heaven here? They used to show us like an angel sitting on a cloud with a harp. Who would want to do that, right? Would you go to church and give up everything to sit on a cloud all by yourself? You know, no other living entities around, right? So this is how the Maya has, you know, turned people away from it and make it seem stupid and seem troublesome. Bhagavad Gita brings it all back to life. Anybody reads Bhagavad Gita, whether they're Christian or Muslim or Jewish or anybody, they'll get a real understanding of their own religion. We don't say you have to change. You have to understand what your own tradition is, what your own scripture is. That's what we're trying to teach people. That's why we're giving people Bhagavad Gita. So, any questions? Yeah.
You said one devotee asked Prabhupada, why did Krishna create Maya? And Prabhupada answered that, Krishna is not creating Maya, that's the one that created Maya by himself.
You created it.
Yeah. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am the source of the material and the spiritual world, and that everything emanates from me.
Everything comes from him, but he creates the Maya because of our desire. To fulfill our desire to try to enjoy separately from Krishna. Everything, he didn't and say, I'm going to make Maya and throw all the certain people in there and watch them suffer. That's what some people think God does. Okay, I like this guy, put him in heaven. I don't like this guy, we'll put him in Lagos, you know, whatever, Tokyo, Calcutta, anywhere, you know, in the material world. But no, we choose. So Krishna arranges everything for what the living entities want.
Right?
Yes.
Any other question?
Yeah.
When I was looking for the wonderful class, I have a friend who asked me, he said, do we believe in hell?
Yeah.
I said, yes, there's hell. He said, do devotees go to hell?
Sometimes. To preach. Devotee will go to preach. A reporter asked Prabhupada in London, devotees go to hell. Prabhupada said, isn't London hell? And the next day the headline of the newspaper said, Swami says London is hell. But devotees sometimes go to liberate people from hell. Some stories about that. But it's not the same. They don't go to hell and suffer. Like, you know, devotee doesn't have to go to hell. And if you're a devotee your whole life and you're trying to be a devotee, no matter what, at the time of death, Krishna just take you. You don't have to go to Yamaraj to be judged. Krishna just takes you. All right? Any more?